So crickets. Good morning, Nick.
Nathaniel, it's Nick.
We're all alone this morning.
All alone and yet so together. I feel always with
you. So it's just the two of us, and we're going to talk about a movie that we are not simpatico on.
Apparently not.
So I've been proselytizing for Short Term 12 since I saw it a couple months ago. And I thought for sure you would love it, but it turns out you didn't love it.
And I will confess at the beginning, I was like bummed out, tired while I was watching it. So that can't have helped it exactly. But yeah, I'm eager to talk to you about it.
Okay. I don't know where to begin other than to say...
What's wrong with me?
Yeah. Well, because, okay, let me preface this a little bit. You and I have had many, many conversations offline about movies, as well as online. And one thing that I think, even though we have very separate tastes in a way, even though people like to lump anybody who loves Oscars and actresses together,
yeah.
That one thing that I think that we do see really similarly about in film is the sort of lack of empathy and humanism for characters.
Yes.
Like, we both tend to respond poorly if we feel like nobody involved in a movie, like, has any sort of morality about how people should treat each other, how we should view characters, how, you know, how we should forgive flaws, you know, like, that sort of thing. Like, we both like complex humanity on screen.
Yep.
So that's, I guess that's the reason why I was surprised when you didn't respond to Short Term 12, because for me it was like a godsend, because I felt like everybody involved and the subject was so respectful of like true humanity and like how people sort of struggle and get through everything. So that's actually where I want to start, because it just seemed like something that you and I both respond to, and yet you did not respond to it.
Yeah, and I think that probably was at the... You're right that would have been at the core of what I did respond to. Like, I don't know if you've had a movie that was like this for you recently where, like, I felt sympathetic to the project the whole time, and I never felt like, oh, I'm not enjoying this, I don't like this movie. But for some reason, like, there was just a misalignment for me the whole time between, like, an abstract, like, I'm kind of for this, and I'm still on its side, but, like, beat by beat, I just kept not being excited about the choices that were being made. Have you had that recently? Like, was there a movie that you just couldn't get into, even though it seemed like you kind of should?
Well, I mean, this is going to be a weird, weird comparison, because they're, like, completely different planets, but Gravity.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Because I was...
You said planets.
Because I was so... into it, the concept of the project.
Yeah.
And I really love ambitious, you know, like, auteur feats.
Yeah.
And I just felt so compromised to me every...
Right.
All through it.
And I weirdly felt, like, I remember what you were saying about Gravity on the podcast last week, and that does sound in a lot of ways like, I guess, how I was feeling. Like, I liked the goals that this movie had for itself, and there should clearly be many more movies like this in the marketplace. And everything you've been saying about how, like, there's not a single selling hook for it, and that's part of why it's so precious. Like, I like all that about it, but I didn't like the filmmaking, and on top of that, I guess I just felt like at all times, I felt like I was seeing all the strategizing about exactly how this movie wanted to move me around. And
well, I mean, it is fairly schematic. Like, you can, you know, it's got like the sort of bookend scenes.
Yeah,
you know, in a lot of ways, it is like, I mean, it's not a first film, but in a lot of ways, it feels like a first film, like a very studied first film. Like,
yeah, I thought it was one when I saw it. I didn't realize until later.
In that, you know, you can see structurally what it's doing the whole time.
Yeah.
But I don't really care about whether or not I see blueprints as long as I'm interested in what they're building.
Yeah.
I think I just found it so incredibly moving. And you know how, like, we, a lot of times in criticism, people get very sort of down on people who are like, but it was so moving. Like,
right.
You know, glossing over, you know, it has heart, you know, all the Oscar right. nominees over the years or these inspirational stories or what have you.
And they're like, dupe.
Yeah. Right. But in this case, it was so, it was not any sort of glossy moving. Like, it had flaw, like, the characters had flaws, and there was, like, a lot of, like, tough love.
Yeah.
So I didn't feel at all sort of embarrassed about how moved I was by it.
Uh-huh.
Or even manipulated, except for in the right way. Like, since you're supposed to manipulate me, I'm watching your movie.
Yeah, and I think we talked about this before, too. I actually don't mind being manipulated either. You know, like, that's another one of those words people will use when they just are not into the emotional responses that a movie was engendering, especially if it felt obvious how it was doing it. So I'm not categorically against manipulation, but I just didn't find these strategies of guiding my response particularly unexpected or innovative. And, like, once the movie got started, the only things that surprised me about it were kind of some of the things that felt so literal to me. Like, does she have to have? I mean, I think it's, you know, on the one hand, I get it that we don't ever fully spell out exactly what Grace's past is about. But the kind of suggestions that, like, the empathy with this one particular character are about probably having some pretty parallel experience in the past, mm-hmm. which... just sounds like one of those limited dramatic devices that we've talked about in other contexts, that, like, you can only relate to people who kind of ring a bell. I mean, it's not like you can only relate to people, but I guess I felt a really big margin between the couple of characters in the facility who really get highlighted for us as patients and all of the background people at that facility who I felt like I had no connection to at all. There were just 12 people who lived here, and I now know about 3 of them. And the ones that were getting picked out, I thought got really absorbed in that sort of schematic imagination one way or another by the movie.
Because I can see that about the Caitlin Dever character with Brie Larson's Grace.
Uh-huh.
Because they do, I mean, the movie's even not shy about that at all, about
right.
connecting the two.
Right.
But I don't see that. I don't see that argument with Keith Stansfield character. He's for those of you who have not seen the movie, he's turning 18, so he's about to be released from this whole system that the whole milieu that the movie takes place in, the foster care.
Yeah.
So he's about to go out into the wild without any sort of, and he even, you know, literalizes this in a song that he writes about that, not having any idea what a real life is like.
Literalizes would be the word.
Yes. Right, but I mean, shouldn't he? He's 17 years old and he's writing us lyrics. I mean, to me, that rang totally true.
He probably should. Like, it was, again, like 5 degrees away from this scene. I can see the version of it I would really like.
Like that? Yeah. It don't matter now. Damn near 18. All the pretty pictures in my fucking head is faded. And when I think about that trick that raised me, I think about sick, cause the bitch is crazy. Fuck that bitch, nigga, fuck that pain. Your body's in the ditches, so I just turned up brain. I mean, I can't see how you claim it. You be a mock doctor, snatch me out to snatch a pair of evil eagle claws. Ho, 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 slut, fuck the way you want it. Got your young dumb son pitching pigeons for money. I mean, it's colder than the bitch when it's sunny. Blows raining down on the globe. Got the nerve to tell me you love me. I said again, again, sell it again. Bitch, I'm 10. Let me go outside and function with friends. You say you ma, you mother, you the father fucking queen. I say, all right, I love her, so I flip it again. So put me in your book so you know what it's like to live a life not knowing what a normal life's like. Put a label on my head so you know what it's like to live a life not knowing what a normal life's like. Look into my eyes so you know what it's like. Look into my eyes so you know what it's like. Look into my eyes so you know what it's like to live a life not knowing what a normal life's like.
Whether it's jail movies or medical wing movies or care facility movies, like, the person who finally is going to get...
You say that like it's a whole genre.
Well, like, what they share in common is that they all have the one person who's about to be released, who, and that should be a good thing, and they kind of can't handle it, and usually what happens to them involves, like, blood on the floor. So I just waited, and then, like, the way the movie handles the end of that was so... I realize we're getting into spoilers territory, but there's but one thing, you know, where you're surprised I didn't connect more with the movie's empathetic gestures, I felt like there were specific storytelling moves that usually bug you, like the way we get totally filled in on the completion of that character's arc by having people talk about it in this totally ginned up, here's an anecdote for 10 minutes way, rather than dramatizing any of it, which just seemed so weird to me after where we left that character and what we assume has happened to him. Lots of talking. And I didn't believe the story at all.
Wow. Who are you? Yeah,
well, who are you? How are we not ourselves? As I mentioned. I just didn't... Maybe this is another weird comparison, but this would be a little bit like kind of how Winter's Bone was for me. Like, I liked a lot of what I was seeing on the screen, and I think that movie's more technically prepossessing than this one is, but I just had a fundamental, like, this is a cool character. It's especially a cool character for a young woman to get to play, because we don't get to see these kinds of young women very often. Mm-hmm. I'm totally conceptually into this, but I'm just not buying it. And I see your script outline constantly. I see the actor rehearsals constantly. None of this feels spontaneous to me, and I get it that it's assuming that it is playing spontaneously. So I read, I think, the Andrew O'Hare review in Salon was like, many viewers will confuse this for a documentary. I was like, what? Like, definitely don't. Like,
you're like, I did not have that problem.
I did not have that problem. And if you compare, like, this group of people to, like, the kids in Precious, like, in her school, really different circumstances, but in those scenes, you're really allowed to make choices as the viewer about which of the arcs among those different women you're going to connect to most or who might be most interesting to you. This is not a movie that's set up to allow you to make those kinds of choices. I felt kind of pushed toward these two, whether or not they were the most interesting to me.
Well, but I have to ask you this, because this is something that we've discussed many times, and this is a clear through line in how you respond to movies. Mm-hmm. This, like, liking to the filmmaker to leave you some space, which is one of the reasons that we both like David O. Russell movies, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
But most movies do not have that inclination. Yeah. So, like, how do you... Like, I mean that, you know, sincerely, like, most do not.
Yeah.
So how do you navigate that as someone who just loves movies and goes to movies all the time?
Well, I mean, I guess, like, I felt like a lot of the value of this particular project was going to be about showing me this whole world, and feeling what it's... And, like, the scenes in the movie that I like are so much about kind of laying the groundwork, not just for what kind of space or community this is, but amongst people who are totally used to it. And so I guess that just felt like, for this particular movie, some of the ways it's shot, some of the novelty in the concept, would recommend a kind of immersion in the space. Mm-hmm. And a kind of... such that, and since we're kind of put side by side with, what's the guy, is he called Nate, the guy who's new when the movie starts?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Since we're kind of, like, stitched to him at the beginning and kind of learning the ropes the same way he is, mm-hmm. It also seemed like we would be feeling our way around for a while before the crux of the movie became apparent, or whether it even had to have one. So I guess those kinds of gestures really implied a movie whose virtues would be loose. And I felt like I was dealing with a movie that had one foot planted in that impulse, but the other in really kind of tunneling toward grace and mm-hmm. a couple of characters who reflect her, which is a fine thing to do. Those impulses just felt a little competitive to me. I mean, how do you feel about your same... How would you answer your same question?
Well, I mean, you didn't answer it so much in general. I meant it in a more general sense, since most movies don't allow you to make those choices. I'm wondering why I bothered you in this one. I guess you did. You did answer it for this.
I guess the general version of that is that a lot of movies, what's interesting about them doesn't seem to involve that. Like, the what would be cool about the project or making that movie wouldn't really require that, of the director's style is making really clear that that's not what it's interested in. And this guy's style seemed to suggest he was interested in that. Uh-huh. But his storytelling suggested he was not or could not or something.
Okay.
What about for you?
Can I steal your answer? I think for me, well, I mean, style's a big thing for me. I remember earlier this year when I did not like Stoker.
Uh-huh.
I was having a conversation with Kurt afterwards, and he was just like, I don't understand why you didn't like that, because we both, like, love style, you know? Like, mm-hmm. give me heightened anything, you know, visually, yeah. or... But I can also feel like that's too oppressive in a movie, but in general, if a movie is concerned with sort of stylizations of any sort, whether it's acting or, you know, visual presentation, that tends to take precedence for me a little bit, or a lot, actually, over uh-huh. things like plot.
Yeah.
Or just, you know, sort of characterizations, because there's a lot to, like, focus on, that so I don't have to think about, but I want to follow this character, you know. I want uh-huh. to think about this character. But I also, I'm probably less, in general, I probably need that a little less than you do in movies, I'm sensing, because I love the sort of notion that a character is just interesting enough when I'm watching them that I can, on my own time after the movie, sort of imagine a movie about them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is something I love to do.
Uh-huh.
So as long as I have enough little doorways or windows to something outside the movie,
uh-huh.
I'm okay with what's inside the movie. Does that make sense?
Yep. Yep. For okay. sure.
I just like it to breathe a little, which yep. I think we both do, but yep. maybe in slightly different ways.
Yeah.
And for me, with this movie, I don't know that I needed it to breathe. Like, I don't know I needed to know about their lives outside of the facility, so maybe that's why it worked for me. Because I wasn't really all that concerned with their futures. And I liked the idea...
The kids or the staff or both?
Both. Uh-huh. I liked the idea that everything comes back to... Everything gets sort of recycled. Uh-huh. So for you, like, the storytelling anecdote, it, you know, for those who haven't seen it, the movie both begins and ends with Grace's boyfriend telling a story about a former child who lived at the facility.
Right.
So it's like bookend scenes, but they're about different people. So I liked the idea. It's like you didn't respond to it because you wanted to see it dramatized or just not talked about. But I responded to it because I loved the sort of realization that it's a constant cycle. Like, as soon as those kids leave, there's going to be new kids, mm-hmm. and everybody's going to continue to reflect each other. And these stories are going to take on, you know, yes, they're anecdotes, but they're anecdotes that become sort of part of the fabric of how people respond to each child.
Right.
I feel like very tongue-tied talking about it, maybe because
I totally understand what you're saying. Yeah, like the way in which, I mean, I think it's that level of tension that I think is interesting in the movie, and that if anything I wanted more of, like the sense that they do have these really deep, empathetic, and sometimes, you know, bonds with these kids, but there's also no way that, I mean, their experiences with these kids clearly do become anecdotal, either because the kids leave or because what they learn at their work experience is obviously playing into how they're negotiating private stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whatever else is true of their stories with their, I mean, patients, wards, clients, I don't know what we say, but they do become grist for different kinds of mills. And the movie kind of has that shape, right? Like, mm-hmm. where the first half is, it's always doing both, but the center of gravity in the first half of the movie really seems to be about the huge collection. And by the second half, it's clear how much this is about Grace.
Mm-hmm.
So I see that structure in the film. For people who are worried about spoilers, there's just no way to talk about this without doing it. So hit pause, go see the movie. Like, and even though I wasn't wild about it, everybody should go see this movie. I agree with that. How did you deal with the kind of intensity of Grace's choices in the second half? And where she winds up going, what she winds up contemplating, what she actually does when she gets there.
Well, that is my least favorite part of the movie.
Yeah. But it's like a big
Yes, and if the movie weren't as strong as it was, that scene would have held more weight in how I responded to the movie, I'm sure.
Okay.
But we've joked about this before, but like the awful subject of grades with movies. Like when I'm
Yeah.
seeing a movie that I love, 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 I'm always like, go for the A during it. And
Yeah.
that was the only moment during the movie, and it is sort of like a big narrative climax, if it's not for me the emotional climax at all.
Yeah.
And so the big narrative climax of the movie, when Grace goes to the home of one of the parents of this child she's very connected to, with not necessarily good intent, that struck me as very scripted compared to the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
And that was the only part that I was sort of drifting away from it, like, oh no, you're going to become like a more of a Hollywood version of the story.
Right.
But it course corrected for me,
Yep.
so I was okay with it. And again, it just the weight it would have held in a lesser movie would have been much more severe.
That's so interesting because it's like, I mean, it is interesting how these kinds of disagreements with friends that you really like talking about movies with reveal so much about how you watch in general because, of course, we've all had those experiences where there's a movie we love so much that, like, a thing in it that even plays to us like it's not working just doesn't wind up mattering a ton. Like, I found that during Magic Mike last year when we had to have the, like, well, I bet the Latino character is probably involved in drugs and he's gonna need his money back. Like, oh, like, but I, at a certain level, I just didn't give a shit, right? Everything on every side of that, I just thought was so great. And in this, because I had gone through even the half of the movie that seems a lot looser, like really wanting to be more into it, but just feeling like these just feel like screenwriting schemes to me. And then suddenly something so schematic happens that it probably played to me maybe too much so or unfairly as like, I knew it. I knew this was all about you moving pieces around a board. I have felt that, and now look what's happening. So it made it harder at a moment. It made it harder to get into the movie. But I didn't feel that much differently about Grace's pregnancy. That just felt like maybe one step further than a movie needed to go. I like the idea of them having messy personal lives, but like, I see what's happening to kids all around me, and now I'm not sure if I want my own kid. Like,
Like you think
okay.
it would have worked, just as well if like her boyfriend had wanted a child and that made her be thinking about this.
Or if like she could have complex thoughts about what she thinks about children without it being refracted through whether or not to have one herself. Like, it just felt like a really blunt way to give stakes to that question, which already have huge stakes within her job. And it's not like it's disqualified as something the movie could be about, but I
Right.
needed that to feel interesting and not just like a mirror of what was happening elsewhere.
Okay, got
So I
it.
didn't feel a big release when you think you might, as that particular subplot culminates in a certain way. It just hadn't meant much to me.
Okay. Well, that's our thoughts on Short-Term 12. I admitted what was my least favorite part of it. What was your most favorite part of it? So we can end on a positive note, since I still want everyone to see this movie.
Yeah, and like again, I'm sincere. I really do also, not just because this is the kind of movie we should all support, but it's really different from anything else that's out right now. And come to your own feelings about it. But I think that I liked some of the, like, I liked that scene where she's. I'm thinking of a few different scenes. I guess they all point in the direction of I liked that sense of watching her not be this indomitable individual who just wins everybody to her side, but that she kind of chameleons with each of her kids. And I'm thinking about the moment where she and Caitlin Dever are kind of using humor with each other in a really guarded, nervous way to try to establish a connection on the bed. And her ways of talking to Marcus are a little different than that, and her ways of talking to her boyfriend are a little bit different. So did you write about this in your review, like watching how she's having, or was this Tim Brayton having to act and also act about acting, because
That was Tim Brayton.
that was Tim? Okay.
Yeah.
I liked that dimension of how the film had conceived her, and that she does change a little bit in her different encounters.
All right, so that's short-term 12. Do you want to do reader questions?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, we got a few of them on Twitter. So here's one from Carlos. Who should be Jonathan Glazer's next muse now that he's worked with Nicole Kidman and Scarlett Johansson?
Oh, my God. And let's not leave out Ray Winstone, because I love that, too.
Oh, yeah.
God, what do you think?
I was going to say, I had an immediate answer pop into my head, but it's always my answer, Vera Farmiga.
Yeah, we had that answer a lot.
Just because I think, in at least from what's been inferred by reading about Under the Skin and from what I experienced with Nicole Kidman in Birth,
yeah.
He's like the perfect director for actresses who are very good at sort of internalized minimalism, where they're sort of just like these huge, like their faces are these open receptacles to anything you might be feeling or want to project upon them.
Yes.
Which I think Vera Farmiga is very good at, which is why I was so, when there was that big casting kerfuffle about who might play Sandra Bullock's role in Gravity, where I was just like, it has to be Vera Farmiga, because that's a face I could stare at for 2 hours, you know.
Especially since she's like, if I move it 2 more degrees, it's a different face, but if I move it 2 more degrees, it's a different face, and if I move I don't even understand the geometry of her face. It's amazing.
Yes. So that would be my answer. I would love to see an auteur really, like, latch on to her, because she, you know, you and I have had a little experience with watching her in a movie together that we loved in The Conjuring.
Yeah.
We just love, like, how into everything she's doing she is in movies.
Yes.
Even if she has a throwaway part, she is not going to throw it away.
Yes. I have a slightly unimaginative answer, although I think it would be an amazingly imaginative movie, that if he could lure Bjork into being in a film again, and given how amazingly they work together on their videos, but given how, like, conceptual art Under the Skin actually is,
mm-hmm.
I think, like, and given the time he seems to take between his projects to get them right, like, I would be pretty amazed at something they would collaborate on, if it showed us a whole new way of a Bjork movie than Dancer in the Dark, which is already a pretty amazing movie. Mm-hmm. So that would be one thing, but maybe Samantha Morton would be an amazing Glazer accomplice also, for all the reasons you just said about Farmiga.
Oh, yeah. I could totally co-sign that.
And if he wants to make a movie with a man, then fine. But
right. What man has a face that you could project any emotion onto?
Maybe Ralph Fiennes would be an amazing collaborator with him, because he has so much background and so much art and seems totally happy to be in concept-y stuff. And I would like to shake his career a little bit out of where it's been the last few years. So there's a face we could stand to look at more often.
That's true. I like that answer. I could go with Jude Law also.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
But mostly just because I love looking at his face. Here's another question from Daniel. If you could ironically or earnestly retitle any film of recent release, what would it be?
I made you go first last time, so I can't do it again. Well, if we could get away from naming movies after the people in them, that would be fantastic.
Oh, you didn't like Mud.
Which is, like, amazing to me that turned out to be named after a person in it. It's like, fuck, even when I don't seem that way, they are. Come on.
It would help. Like, as it turns out, you don't know this because you haven't seen the movie The Family, that bad De Niro Pfeiffer movie that's out right now. It was originally called Malavita, which sounded like such an interesting title compared to The Family. Yep. And it turns out Malavita is the name of a character in the movie, but not the character you'd be expecting.
Oh.
It's the name of their family dog.
Does it mean, like, bad living? Is that what that would translate to, Malavita?
I have no idea. But it was when they called the dog that, I was like, wow, the movie was named after the dog, and he has, like, 2 scenes, but anyway.
Gosh, this is a tough question, Daniel Massey.
It is a tough question, but I like, you know how the butler ended up being called Lee Daniels the butler?
Yeah.
And yet we all think it's the least Lee Daniels of his movies.
Yeah.
But I would want The Great Gatsby retitled Baz Luhrmann's The Great Gatsby, because to me it's just not The Great Gatsby.
Good. And he doesn't seem like he's trapped in a spirit of modesty that would forbid that. Like,
I should call all his movies Baz Luhrmann.
Yeah, exactly. Just Baz Luhrmann.
Baz Luhrmann 1, Baz Luhrmann 2.
You know how all Seal's 3. Albums were called Seal for the longest time? Just do it. As. I would like to retitle Philomena, both because it's named after the person, I'm assuming, and because that title just sounds like a doily, or, you know, they've already had a movie called Ladies in Lavender, and that didn't seem like it could get worse than that, and here's Philomena, even though I like old lady movies. So maybe if we could call that, if you love something, don't set it free. If you love something, don't go get it back. I don't know.
Philomena.
Yeah. Not looking forward to it. Or we could just call it, like, trying to do the queen again. Like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. My friends and I had this joke in the 90s where we for a while, I unfortunately don't remember any specific examples, but for a while we retitled every movie to be about its high concept plot line.
Uh-huh.
Because we were obsessed with that, the fact that they changed that cop gives waitress $2 million tip title It Could Happen to You, which was such a lame title.
Yeah.
And cop gives waitress $2 million tip was such a funny title. Even though it's also dumb, you know?
Yes.
And so for a while we were doing that, like every movie would be retitled with its, with its plot line.
I remember one of my favorite jokes in a, that also, like, Anthony Lane is a critic I really have stopped reading in certain ways because I just don't believe he likes movies. I think he just likes being funny.
Yeah.
But his review of Doubt I thought was hilarious and apt when he said the only way to make this material work if you're going to have this bad a director is just to make the whole thing as crass as the story kind of frankly is. And they should have just called it Blood Wimple and had lightning crashing behind her head all the time. Like, not just sometimes when she talks is there a thunderclap, as there is in Doubt, but every time. And snot rains out of Viola Davis's nose. So then when I saw that Romanian movie, Beyond the Hills, that certainly should have been called Blood Wimple as well. And it's even more, like, ridiculously self-serious, just to prove that just by being a conny kind of foreign art film doesn't make you immune on this podcast. Mm-hmm. One day you're in and the next day you're out. Christian Mungiu's Blood Wimple.
So, you know what movie I think is perfectly titled this year, though, I have to say, is Blue Jasmine.
Uh-huh.
Because I love, and that is named after a character, but I love that Jasmine is not really her name.
Right.
And I also love that you can think of the blue in different ways as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really elliptical title. I like that about it, too.
So that's our answer to that very tough question. I would also change the name of Rush, but to God knows what, because Rush.
I'm still young. We can call it that. Ron Howard's I'm still young. I'm very exciting.
Ron Howard's this, Ron Howard's that.
Right. His authorial signature is so vivid.
Okay, so actually this leads into something you wanted to talk about. CM Gardner asked, what recent Oscar movie did you change your tune on during award season for good or bad? But it brings up a question that you were asking me offline about, like, is there any movie that we keep changing our mind about or that we might change our mind about?
Mm. My answer to his actual question is probably The Artist. And I didn't actually turn on that movie. But when I saw it in September at a critic screening for the Chicago Film Festival, so it was in that moment where we knew that the Weinsteins were going to try to really push it, but it hadn't kind of happened yet. Like, almost nobody I talked to in my life had heard about this French silent movie yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought it was so much fun. Mm-hmm. And I was so coasting, and back to that conversation about, like, yes, the second half is not as strong as the first, but I just couldn't care that much.
Mm-hmm.
And I assumed I was going to want to watch that movie over and over and was going to be right in line as soon as it came out. And then I don't know if it was because of the awards narrative totally overtaking it, but I didn't want to go back and see it again. I think I slightly suspected that the second half problems would bug me more the second time. Mm-hmm. I tried rewatching it for one of our podcasts, I think like 2 years ago, or for the Oscar roundtable or something. And I think I just want to remember how delightful I found it the first time, and I'm worried I won't feel that way again.
That is a really good answer, and that is a movie. I didn't turn on that one either. I loved the movie, but I enjoyed it. I think I watched most of it again a second time, because I had the screener and whatnot, but I'm not a big rewatcher in general, but also when I really, really love a movie, this is going to sound so weird to most people, I'm actually less likely to watch a movie I just was emphatically in love with the first time. Because I love having that feeling be the feeling that I have about the movie and not being over familiar with it.
Yeah.
Like, it took me probably 5 or 6 years to go back to Dancer in the Dark. Since you brought that up, that was in my head just now, because I was so absolutely blown away by that movie. I didn't even want to see another movie after it for like 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
I was just so overwhelmed by it.
I can see that.
I like that, you know, ephemeral feeling that you first get.
I guess my good version of this the same year would have been War Horse, which I wasn't even excited to see. I put it off as long as possible, and then I liked it so much, and it was kind of featured in so much Oscar coverage as like kind of an also-ran from the minute it showed up in Best Picture, which was kind of a surprise in itself, which is totally fair in terms of how the competition was working out. But I found myself kind of defensive about that movie, and so I thought about it a lot, and I just kept liking it more, even though I haven't rewatched that one either.
While we're on that year, the one that happened to me for was The Help.
Oh,
because like I see all the flaws that upset people about it, but I think maybe because I started feeling protective of it because people were just so mean to it, and I think it has so many good qualities as well.
Yep.
That I ended up, you know, seeing it like 3 times, and which is a lot for me, and just really like I still really think of it very fondly.
I'm with you. I saw that 3 times also, and partly that was about trying to figure out a stable reaction to what's really problematic in that movie and what's really good in it. And I felt the same. I felt this, like, there are some criticisms of that movie that I just felt like are really unfair and are really about other movies that one reminds them of. I mean, I don't get to say what people think is legitimate. That's not, I shouldn't say that, but that movie's smarter than it sometimes got credit for.
Yeah. And the movie that takes my crown for the movie I've changed my mind about the most times in my lifetime is Spike Jonze's adaptation.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's going way back now, but I saw that movie, I think, 4 or 5 times. And every time I saw it, I had a completely different reaction. Going from like, the first time I saw it, I just loved it. The second time I was like, huh. And I think the third time I just despised it. And the fourth time, like, I was like, okay, I'm back to the middle again. I think it's a super fascinating movie, but in a lot of ways it bugs the shit out of me.
Uh-huh.
And I love the performances, but it just feels, I don't know, I feel oppressed when I watch it.
Yeah.
So that's something I changed my mind about a lot.
I've been on that roller coaster with American Beauty, for which reason, partially because I teach it, or used to teach it a lot. Mm-hmm. And it just feels like, every time I watch it, if it's one of the times where I find it completely delicious and kind of canny about how it puts over a wobbly script in a really authoritative way, then the next time I watch it, it's almost guaranteed I'll be like, what a bunch of crap. and vice versa. And then the other one is My Own Private Idaho, which I just hated the first 3 times. It was the first movie I ever didn't finish that I rented. I just was so bored. Even though I thought at age 12 or whatever, this movie's probably for me in some way I'm not willing to think about right now. And so then I kept wanting to see it again. But it's taken like 7 or 8 tries to really get into it. And I think I'm into it now. I can't tell if I've sort of forced myself. It's why I never write about it or write about him whenever I'm doing new queer cinema stuff. Because it just, I don't understand what kind of movie it is. It's just, even internally, it seems to change so much, and yeah, I've never gotten to the bottom of how I feel about it.
Interesting. Maybe we should do a project and all watch that together.
Maybe we should.
Well, that was so much fun.
It was so much fun.
Yeah, so we're going to wrap up now. Thanks for your questions, everyone, and go out and see Short Term 12. And once again, I'm Nathaniel from The Film Experience, and I was here with Nick Davis from Nick's Flick Picks.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll get more of the group back. We did not lock them in a closet. They're still here. Everybody's fine.
Bye.
Bye.